Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Well, today is January 2nd. It's 2023. Can you imagine? I can't believe we made it this far. But anyway, we have. And today is a wonderful day because as we begin our day our week every Monday, it begins with White Plains Citizen reporter, publisher, and editor John Bailey, who's already on the line with us. So good morning, John, and Happy New Year to you.
Good morning and Happy New Year. It's always a great occasion for everybody to start over and do better.
Absolutely. It is a challenge, you know. I'm glad you mentioned that because I haven't thought about the challenge of the new year for a very long time. So it's a good wake-up call. I think it's important because it challenges us to do better, to be more introspective, and to be more knowledgeable. It's all about more, you know, which I think is great. Well, there's a lot of stuff to cover, and you've covered a lot of stuff in the White Plains Citizen at reporter WPCNR.com website, which you manage. What do you think is the most important thing that's come up in your mind right now? Is it, of course, the continuing expansion of COVID and new Omicron deviants that are coming into play?
Yes. I mean, we have a terrific problem in China.
Yeah.
And they have a problem is just out of control, as Dr. Caitlin Jedalina, the I can never pronounce that right, writes in her newsletter, the COVID situation in China is out of hand. In an interesting turn of events, China went from zero COVID to let it rip policy by dropping all mitigation measures without fully vaccinating the highest of risk for strengthening their healthcare system. China stopped
The Chinese created their own inoculations, which were not as viable as the ones that we had here in the United States, national pride. But the effectiveness of their vaccines were like 60%. Compared to effectiveness as compared to ours. And even though they had lockdowns, it didn't help very much. It's not like, I don't think they let anything rip now as opposed to before. It was out of control before, but they were lying about their numbers. This is the thing that's outrageous, that we've permitted them to lie for such a long time and that we didn't seem to have a mechanism or the will to expose them even a year or two ago, because this has been going on forever.
Well, we always cut them a pass because they're such a powerful nation, and we're tired of cutting China a pass, aren't you? In fact, I'm tired of cutting America a pass for not paying attention.
Well, I agree with you on the former and the latter, concept you just brought out. I think that I find it offensive that yes, they're probably our largest trading partner. They're the second largest trading partner in the world, but we permitted them to steal our technology. We permitted them to undermine us. We've permitted them entry into our marketplace when they keep on stealing. And why we let that happen is beyond me. I don't even know why we allow their student population to become get an education here in the United States. Because it matters if you get a degree in the United States as opposed to whatever they get over there. It's a cachet for them. What do we get in return?
Meanwhile, we have to pay attention to how many Chinese we let into this country with this COVID spread that's going on over there.
Yeah, but you know,
I haven't heard anything
that,
about that.
We say that all the time, except that we don't have any mechanism. And you know what? And this is the same problem that happened before, years ago, when they were looking to commandeer people who came from particular countries. But you know what? Planes don't fly nonstop from Beijing to New York. They may. I don't know what their route structure is. But the point is, where not every plane is from China. It may be from China to Helsinki, from Helsinki to New York. Or do we check their passports? I don't know. I don't think we ever did, because I didn't think we had the brains to figure it out. The point is, you can go from Beijing to Germany, from Germany to the United States, and that's the way it works. Not everything is nonstop. And we just lull ourselves into complacency by this BS that we hear, and there's nobody challenging the reality. Maybe it's because we're not that sophisticated. Maybe we just don't understand how the planes fly. And I don't understand why that's so difficult. Don't we have somebody who's in, like, the czar of the skies who knows what's going on? What about the Federal Aviation Authority? Don't they know? I don't get it. It sounds like
pay attention to this. We have to pay attention to this. We have to testing at the airports. We have to be quarantining persons from the Orient, and not
why
just
do we
China.
Have to quarantine
and,
them? Why do we permit them on a plane bound for America, no matter where you come from? No matter how many stops you made along the way before you got on a flight that will take you to somewhere in the United States, whether it be from Asia, from South America, from Canada, from wherever in the world you want to come from, and you connect to a flight or are on a nonstop flight to the United States, everybody's got to be sequestered the minute they get off the goddamn plane, and they need to be each tested. And they also need to have their documentation that proves they're not infected, and it has to be a recent test. When I go to the doctor and they have to conduct some sort of surgery on me, do you know that they demand that I also test negative against COVID? Did you know that? They do that at Columbia Presbyterian, and I'm sure that every logical and smart hospital does the same thing. And why shouldn't they?
Yeah, because the hospitals are getting swamped with cases, and particularly around the New York metropolitan area.
Why should the doctors die, or why should the doctors get sick? Because we don't want to take a test? Why? You can even get them for free. What's the problem? But the point is, if you're coming to the United States from abroad, you better have your documentation. I don't even know why any plane that you connect to or nonstop into the United States should permit you to even board the goddamn plane, even with your ticket, even in first class or whatever you have, unless you got documentation to prove that you're clean and you're not infected. And it had better be in the last few days before your flight.
Yes, and they have to pay attention to this.
Well, of course.
U.S. has to pay attention to this because it's really serious now, the way COVID is spreading, despite the Pollyanna attitude in the media.
Well, you mentioned in your article that there's a new Omicron deviant. That is now engaged over 20% of the new infections in the New York metropolitan area. It's only going to grow.
It's really something.
And supposedly the inoculations that we presently have are not effective or as effective. They may prove to be effective to some extent, but not as effective as they were to the other COVID variants.
Yeah, this is XBB 1.5.
Yeah.
That's the name of
it. I don't think we're getting enough direction. I'm very, very disappointed in Westchester County's pronouncements. They're always behind the curb, and they're not on target. They're not in front of the scene. And I don't know what their problem is. Maybe their problem is they're afraid to be the first ones out there with the news. Or who's squashing the news? And why don't we know it in Westchester County? We're an important county. I don't get it.
Well, Westchester is now, has just finished off, I believe, its fifth consecutive week of 2,000 cases. We haven't had reports on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday cases, but I can tell you that that is probably going to be another 2,000 cases.
Absolutely.
And,
why is that acceptable? That's what I don't understand. Why is that acceptable? Why are we hiding it from the public? Because let me tell you, I'm
not hiding it from the public, but to my way of thinking, people don't want all this negative news at this time of year, or they haven't wanted it for months. They want to believe
that COVID is
in the rearview mirror, but it's not.
Well, I disagree with you. It's not that they don't want to know. I think they do want to know. But the very bodies that are supposed to oversee all this information are undermining media by not telling us the reality. If they would do the reporting that would come from the medical profession, and there are people that get the message out, but we don't hear about it through let's say like from Westchester County, we've got somebody who's an executive that's supposed to oversee all kinds of disease and illnesses. We don't hear from them. Why is that?
No.
And, the fact that we don't hear from them is what undermines reporting, because the reporting only disseminates further and validates what's being said. And without the voice of media, then their voices at Westchester County are not heard, because we are the loudspeaker.
Yeah. They haven't been heard for a long time. This is a problem. I think you have to tell people what is actually going on so that they can make good decisions about socialization and all that. And when you don't, they think it's okay. And right now we are heading in toward unknown territory in January, when the schools reopen, and who knows? I mean, Nassau and Suffolk County are really exploding in infections. Nassau and Suffolk County never get any flack for this, but they're very bad.
they are really responsible for
spreading it into New York City. Because they commute
I don't know how I don't know how we're going to be able to change that equation. That's for sure, and I find that really very disconcerting. Because for those of us that are reluctant to engage best practice, we're only hurting not only ourselves potentially, but also hurting other people who may be more susceptible than they. And I think that that's really problematic. I've done everything I can for someone of my age and morbidity issues to be inoculated. And that's all I can do. And I still wear my
mask.
Right. And
the other counties of Westchester, Dutchess, Orange, Rockland, Ulster, Putnam, Sullivan, Nassau, and Suffolk on December 29th were responsible for 80% of the number of New York City infections, with only 40% the New York City population. That is an amazing stat. That means we're not paying attention, and it's not good. That is not a good record for the seven counties, the nine counties.
Well, my focus from my web paper is Yonkers. It's called Yonkers Tribune,
yes.
But I cover a few other communities as well. One of the most, I guess dismaying fact is that the largest number of people who become infected is in the city of Yonkers. They've been consistently at the top of the food chain as far as the number of people infected. There's also a rationale to it. Besides a lack of reporting, probably to some extent, a lack of notice from government agencies, people are complacent. But more importantly, they would be less complacent if there was a mechanism and a means to get them inoculated. For example, we have like free food distribution, which I think a lot of communities have. Well, before we give the free food, how about giving the inoculation? How about doing that? And if you don't want the inoculation for whatever reasons you don't want it, then fine, then don't come for the food either. You know, there's got to be a give and take. There's got to be somebody who thinks, and people are not thinking. And if I understand there are some people who don't want the inoculation. They think, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? No problem. I'm not going to deny your right to do whatever you want. Fine.
Yes.
It's not the way I think it's appropriate, because I don't think people are dying from getting the inoculation. There are some that have taken place that have died. They've had other issues and concerns. I hear that some of the inoculation can cause heart palpitations and all kinds of other things. Fine. There's nothing I could do about that. So, okay. But then, you know what? Then maybe you should go to a doctor and get proof of that effect and validate it. And then if you need the free food, then you'll get the free food. But the biggest problem in a poor community like Yonkers is that people don't have the means to buy all this stuff.
Absolutely not.
And it's
it's
a question of wealth or lack thereof.
Right.
Because it costs money to buy those masks.
Yes. Yeah. As it does.
I don't know. I don't know.
The
about,
other thing.
I don't know about. I don't know about you, like in White Plains. A hospital. When I go to Columbia Press, they give out free masks. Doesn't matter. They don't question it. You could take a free mask. I guess you could take five if you want. Whatever. But the point is, it's there, and everybody is given the opportunity. And nobody asks the question about it. And they expect you to wear one while you're there, but you can also walk out wearing one
and
you can take another one
or
wear it.
Yes.
You know,
well, that's
I don't
good
understand why don't we have good practice everywhere. I haven't been to the hospitals in Yonkers because there's no reason for me to go there because those are not the hospitals I attend because my doctors are at New York Presbyterian, so there's no reason for me to go visit the hospitals in Yonkers to see what they're doing. Not a question of challenging anybody, but I would hope they would do the same thing. I don't know what they're doing in White Plains or in New Rochelle or in Bronxville.
Well, I don't see that. No, there's no enforcement of masking. There never has been. And this is not great. I mean, we had a ball drop Saturday, but I don't think it was too well attended. But, you know, it's just not a something that people do. They don't fine people when they're not wearing masks when they should.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do things that would encourage them to mask. And that's been going on since COVID started, 3 years ago, actually. We've been putting up with this for 3 years, and it's going to be with us for another year, easily. the way things are going.
And it seems there are a lot of people who are also getting long COVID, and they're in a horrendous state, and they don't get over it. And at the end, I think it's just a death sentence. And some people are more susceptible than others. Women are more susceptible to long COVID than men. I don't know why. I don't think they've ever figured that one out.
No, they haven't figured that out yet. But there's a lot of things that have been happening with these diseases and variants that we're not being told about and that they discover as they go along. And this is why you have to be very careful not to get it. I tell you, when I took a test this morning because I woke up with a fever, I was really staring down at it, you know. It is really scary when you get sick. You don't know whether it's COVID. You don't know whether it's flu. Yep. You don't know whether it's RSV. And, I mean, those are the three epidemics that you're subjected to. You have to be careful how you close your eyes. You really just do take care of yourselves. And the children are the most at risk because we don't have, I don't believe we have vaccines for the under fives. And they certainly have not been, those that are eligible for it have not been vaccinated at the rate they should be getting vaccinated by their parents.
Well, that's true as
and
well.
This is sad. Yeah, no one wants to see their kid sick. It's a big word.
Oh, one thing to come because we're always losing the time.
Yes.
You know, you had written on the White Plantation Net Reporter about the governor making history as well as making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the first woman to get elected governor of the state because she succeeded Cuomo when he was forced out of office. So that was just, you know, a movement internally. But this time she got elected. This is the first time a woman has been elected the governor of the state of New York. It's huge.
Well, it also points out how people could see through the things that were said about her and the campaign of Save Our State and the Zeldin campaign completely relied on all sorts of the kind of hyperbole that we see every day on some of the news networks. And people saw through that. They saw somebody who worked hard, who was doing things every day. People like an official that does things.
Yeah.
So few of them do. And in fact, I would say that for most people in office, down in Washington, up in Albany, I think you have to start over. You have to think, well, what is it that I'm doing wrong? You've been doing a lot wrong. You've been looking out for yourselves and your own survival. And what you now have to do is think, how can we help the state survive? And the people.
Well, you know what's so interesting is that a lot of the politicians that stand before us, first of all, they lie quite often, or they exaggerate their resume, like this guy Santos, who came up with one BS story after another about his resume. He was elected. Yeah. Can you imagine? He won, and yet there are now investigations into what he did and if it's even appropriate. But I think the fact that they're just investigating means that they probably don't have any means to get this guy out. But everything that he said was a falsehood. Where he went to school, his religion, his background, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find offensive is not that, well, of course it's offensive what he did, but what I find even more offensive is that there is no mechanism to validate the people who stand before us in any of the political parties. We don't know who they are. And there's no place to go to validate what they say, if it's legitimate or not. And the parties that endorse them have no clue. How could that be? How could that be?
Well, it is what it is. I mean, this guy is just a smooth talker. He was a smooth talker.
A smooth talker, but I wonder how come we have literally deficient people in our political parties who have no means nor interest to find out if the people who stand before us representing their party, whoever that party may be, and they don't validate the credentials of the person who stands for them in their party before they get to the public. How come there's no scrutiny here? And isn't it amazing? I almost have to thank this guy for exposing this bullshit, because he's proven that I can't trust the party.
No politician wants their background scrutinized. That's why they didn't scrutinize his.
Well, you
find out a lot by scrutinizing.
I guess it is important to some extent. These are people who stand before us, claim that they're, they're, I don't know what the right term is, but they're supposed to be credible people. How can people who deceive us, the voter, be trusted not to deceive us when they get to the halls of power? What are they going to do?
Yeah.
Are they going to cover up what they're doing and not tell us the truth? And who's going to oversee it? Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
We have had lots of cover-ups. I mean, it's, going back to history, back to Watergate, back to lots of cover-ups. And there is a history kind of chicanery in government for a long time. And, but now the situation is this guy is actually going to be in Congress. He's going to be in Congress.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're all going to be in there. Everybody who was elected is going to be in there. And they are now charged with getting this country through a very difficult period in its history. And we have to hope that they rise to the occasion, which, this is a big thing. It's a big thing. They have to rise to the occasion. And, of course, we were talking last night, about, who's going to run as Biden's vice presidential nominee 2 years from now. That's a good question, because unless you have someone as running for vice president who the American public have confidence in, Biden may not be able to win. Or if Biden continues to live, and can run. Big time thoughts that have to be fought by the Democratic Party.
I don't know if they are. I think it's all about expediency and who's got the, I don't know. I don't know what the passport is to get designated to the top of the food chain here. Hey, they say Hillary Clinton wants to run again. I don't know. I think, Kamala Harris to me is just a waste of time. I don't find her credible. I don't find her lucid. I just don't find her pertinent in the equation. It's not that she defers to President Biden. I think she has no capacity. And I'm sorry, but being a woman of color doesn't quite cut it because she's just ineffective. And she doesn't seem to have leadership qualities. I don't care if she's a woman of color. It just doesn't.
Right. Well, nobody thought Kathy Hochul had leadership qualities either. for some time.
Well,
she just went around the state doing PR work.
Well, that's what they thought because that was the way to diminish her.
Because that's what Cuomo
wanted to do. He wanted to hide her. So he used her because she was a woman. He used her to just say, well, I'm supportive of a woman, a deputy governor, but she did all the heavy lifting while he was governor. She went around, and she had a great gift with people, and evidently she's proved it. A lot of people just don't get an opportunity.
That's for sure. And I mean, Kamala Harris was absolutely invisible the last 2 years.
Yeah, she could have made some noise. She didn't make any.
She could have made some good noise. She could have made policy statements. She could have made them for Biden.
Yes, she could.
And given her some statesmanship. But I mean, he didn't want that. I mean, he's
old.
He's old
Either
school.
She didn't want it or they didn't want it from her. I don't know.
No.
So, look, women are repressed quite often in a male society. So I don't know.
Yes.
I can't judge one way or the other what it was. Probably a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But I just find her innocuous in every shape and form. And I would have expected a hell of a lot more. I don't know why they even took her.
They could have gotten a hell of a lot more out of her, is my point.
I think so.
They could have.
You're right.
But they didn't want to. They didn't want to. But this is always the way it is when men are in power. And when the women point out, look, you are not really doing this right and all that, they are considered uppity.
Mm-hmm. That's
still
true
the
as
case.
Well.
Yes, I mean, and look what happened to AOC and the upstarts. They were denigrated by their fellow Democrats, and they spoke truth. They spoke truth, and it is unfortunate that when you expose what's wrong, you become the wrongdoer because you can't do that.
I didn't agree with everything that Ocasio-Cortez had said, but whatever. I guess the thing is that she placed all her eggs in one basket, and the people that she spoke about evidently didn't come out to support her as much as she would have expected. So her patina has been diminished quite a bit over the years. And yet she's still a formidable character. And so who knows where she's going to go. She's very self-driven good for her.
Yeah. The other problem is that women won't vote for women that are too strong.
Why?
Like a person like AOC. I don't know. You have to ask them. But they don't. Why did people not vote for... Why did so many women not vote for Hillary Clinton?
I don't know. I found Hillary Clinton... I don't know. I just didn't find her. I didn't find her compatible with my mindset. I don't know what it was with her. I found her lacking. I don't know where her husband seems to be pretty good as a leader.
He's a pretty
boy. Maybe we think of men differently than we do women in politics specifically. I don't know.
The seduction of charisma.
Yeah, I guess good point.
I mean, you can't do that, but that is the past, and now we are presented with a future that right now is you really wonder what's going to happen. I think DeSantis could very well take the Republican nomination and probably win, unless the Democrats get a good ticket together. And I don't know how they do that at this point.
Well, Michael Edelman normally would have been on the broadcast at this time. I hope I'm not pushing you beyond your time slot, because I see we're already over half an hour. But I think what was interesting is that when it comes to I lost my train of thought with regard to I forgot now. Forgive me, John.
Right.
So I guess I'm not quite sure what it was. I was probably just infatuated by what you were talking about. But
yes.
I don't know, John. Doesn't look too good.
Well, I mean, next week he can weigh in on that issue, and we hope everything is okay. But,
yeah, let's hope so.
I mean,
so we'll
Washington
see what
politics
on.
Are not my forte.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, just really quickly before you go. The Westchester district attorney, she indicted about 5 people for 56 catalytic converter thefts. And you wrote in your article that those thefts were valued at more than $50,000. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
This is huge.
Yes, but Rocha is making some real headway in her 2 years as district attorney. I mean, she has cracked down on this racket, and she also has been working on the fentanyl problem, which I think is terrific because that's killing people left and right. She brought in the Narcan effort, so she's handling stuff that needs to be handled, and. Now we have to go after the persons that are distributing all this crap illegally with the aid of the corrupt doctors and pharmaceutical persons that would rather prescribe and you know, this is what has happened. And so anyway, this I see great stuff. So, what happened there?
Well, it's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating where we go. Do you see into the 2023? Do you see anything special happening, or are we just going to how will we involve it? Because I don't know where we're going. Not you personally,
well,
me. I just don't know where
the
nation is going.
Well, no, I mean, the problem is that there has to be much more of an effort of controlling COVID. There has to be much more in an effort from the schools in Westchester County for telling us the truth of what's happening in COVID. You know, are the students getting infected more? And telling what is actually happening, because if they don't, it's going to spread out of control. I think the school superintendents in Westchester are making a big mistake by not telling parents flat out, listen, it's going out of control, or it's not.
Well, I got to ask the question when it comes to that to the students. Are the schools testing the student population and giving them a card that says, hey, you passed the test on a particular day? And therefore, that's their entrance into the school?
If you test positive, then you have to stay home for 5 days, take another test to show you're unpositive, and then you can come back. That is the policy in White Plains.
Except they have to do that on their own. Why is it that the schools don't do it?
Oh,
the teachers have to be have to be infected, and the students have to be inoculated, and so does the teacher and the students. And why isn't that happening? Because doesn't that protect everybody in the school?
We would know this if the stupid education department, if New York State didn't say they didn't have to report new cases. And that's what they did.
Right. That's
and
the
this
problem.
Is absolutely one of the most dumbest things that they that I really fault Governor Hochul for not saying, no, you can't do that. We need a handle on this.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
that one of her bad decisions haven't been many. But problem is that everybody wants the economy to recover, and it's not going to recover unless the schools are open.
Mm-hmm.
But they
exactly.
But they also spread through that last year.
Yep.
25% of the White Plains school population caught COVID. Teachers, students, that's a lot, 25%. So,
that's a fortune.
I mean,
yep,
the
yep.
truth. And
yeah.
And so I think 25% was kind of harsh, you know?
Yeah.
But
last week we spoke about some development in White Plains. Have you heard anything about what's going on with what's the name of that big shopping center?
The Galleria.
The Galleria. Do we know what's going to happen
right.
there? Do we know?
No. And the
no.
no. The mayor says they have not presented anything yet, and they themselves have not scheduled any presentation. And not only that, but it's a big question about what you do with that. They had said something like building housing and putting in retail. However, my thinking is they should build a convention hotel on that site. And that way White Plains would have something different that would really attract and help the city by bringing more people into it and competing with New York City.
Well, you
and,
know what I ask you?
I was thinking
in a similar way of refitting the place. So you've got the Galleria. Couldn't we build housing above the Galleria?
We do that
with schools, where schools may be on the ground floor, but then you've got housing above that. So why can't we repurpose that whole thing and do that? Because we're also limited in the amount of acreage that's available for development. But we have more people.
Yeah, it's a very oblong site. It's an oblong site. So you can put up a hotel that is somewhat oblong with great conference rooms on the top floor, huge.
Yeah.
And I'm not an architect, but there is no creativity anymore, you know?
Oh, that's a good point. I wonder why.
I mean,
maybe because less money to be made if you build on top of something that's already existing. I have no idea.
But you've got a parking garage there underneath the Galleria. And it's a natural to put a hotel. And does White Plains need another school? I have my doubts about that, because the school district is not gaining people, and and they don't particularly love putting schools in the downtown area because they like sort of neighborhood schools. But that's a question. The school district believes that they are not going. Their district is not going to grow. That's what they believe.
I see.
So
Well,
we don't discuss these things in public too much in White Plains as to, the future. We never have a conference about the future of the school district where everybody can attend it. I've never seen one in 20 years. Is there a comprehensive plan for the White Plains schools, which is also being developed now for the downtown? And,
uh-huh.
This is, but
we don't have
nobody talks about a comprehensive Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
We don't do that in Yonkers either. I don't know who does. That's the problem. I don't know. It's too much close to the vest. You really have to wonder, like, what is the problem for the public knowing? This is the thing that I find compelling. What is it? Why are we kept in the dark? It's not that I need news. There's enough news to cover.
Because that's where they want you. They want you in the dark so they can control you and keep things as they are.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
That is what government is all about. And
well, John, any last words from you? Because I've kept you over your time slot. Forgive me.
I thought that I did a feature on the top stories of the year, and there were a lot of huge stories in White Plains and Westchester this past year, and they were all pretty big stories and really dealt with issues that the leaders of New York State and every town in Westchester need to pay attention to, because they're all very, very intriguing things. It was an amazing year I felt because of all those stories that I wrote about on the show and talked about on the show, they're not going away. They're not going away. And people have to look at those, and particularly our leaders. They don't want to look at them. They don't.
Yeah.
And when they don't want to do things do not improve. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, yeah.
You'd have to look.
On your website, John Bailey reports the stories of the year 2022 in White Plains and Westchester and issues to come in 2023 right now. And that was dated on the 31st of December. And it's a video as well. So you could watch it all on YouTube.
Yes.
Very nice, John.
Yes, that was my show that I did Friday morning. And put it up on YouTube, and it will play very nicely on YouTube. And we do that so people can see what happened. And I didn't get everything in, but I did get 30 stories in.
Yeah, it's just really, really smart. But that's really good.
Thanks.
Well, it's important for us to hunger for more. So it's a great way to whet our appetite, as they say.
There
great
is
reporting.
Always news hunger.
Absolutely.
Always news hunger. Okay. Well
John,
we'll see you next week.
All the best. Happy New Year to you. And a successful
Happy New Year to you.
Year 2023.
Well, every year is a success, and usually as long as you last. Right.
Good point, John. That's a very good point.
Every year is a
balanced.
Good year when you're still standing on the last day of it. Right.
Absolutely.
Take care, everybody.
Lay back.
Still standing, still standing, and aggravating the establishment. That's what we like.
Excellent.
To
That's the way it's supposed to be done, John.
If they hate you, you're doing a great job.
Exactly.
So take care. Right.
Be well.
Song has the end. It's been
folks.
Great doing this show every Monday. Right. Thanks
a
lot.
I love you. Be well. Thank you.
Right.
So there we have it, folks.
Bye for now.
White Plains Citizen reporter, publisher, and editor, John Bailey. And you can find his website at WPCNR.com, which stands for White Plains Citizen Net Reporter.com, or simply WPCNR.com, which makes life a little bit easier for those who don't want to spell it all out, which is fine, but you could always find it that way. And great information. And the beauty of what John does on the White Plains Citizen Net Reporter .com website is that while Westchester County is a large county, it incorporates so many communities. And what's fascinating about Westchester County is that each one is unique. White Plains is like the seat of government for the entire county. Yet the largest city in the county is the city of Yonkers. And then you've got small little communities of under 10,000 people like Bronxville. And then you've got Mount Vernon. And you've got Ossining and Yorktown and Greenburg. And it goes on and on and on. And each one is different. You got New Rochelle, and you got, I don't know, I'm probably forgetting who knows how many things, but the bottom, Mount Vernon, of course, and no matter how you cut it, each one has a different flavor, a different attitude, different populations, different economics, and so on and so forth. It's just really a fascinating introspection of, I guess, of an entire world and of entire different populations with different demeanor and people and learning and study and schools and houses of worship. It's just breathtaking, and a panoply of people from all over the world, and they all reside here in Westchester County. You just gotta love it. And very, very exciting, to say the least. All right, well, let's move on. We're going to move on to, So Michael Edelman was not able to attend the broadcast today, so we hope we'll speak to him next week. And then we're going to be speaking to Ron Matten, who is a Republican. And hopefully he'll become a candidate for political office. I was hoping that that would happen. Just a brilliant guy. I think that what's fascinating about Ron Matten is he's accomplished. You know what's so interesting is he's just not a wannabe. He knows things. It's really fascinating. He's got the education. He's got the experience. And he's got like hands on work that he's done. And what's fascinating is that you rarely find people who don't simply aspire to political office, but they aspire, but they have the credentials that befit the aspiration that they have politically. Like, you know, it's just amazing when you come to think of it. So anyway, we're going to be speaking to Ron Matten at 11 o'clock, so very, very shortly. He'll be calling in. And so we'll just see where it goes. There are all kinds of things that we could talk about, but I think I'm going to ask him about some of his credentials, because I remember, well, there was something that was really interesting. I ended up writing an article that's called Respect. Political dogma has become a pathology that undermines accommodation of diverse human opinion. And it's written by me. I wrote it yesterday. And it speaks to the ramifications of New York State Senator Shelley Mayer's effort to undermine New York State Governor Kathy Hochul's designating the Honorable Hector D. LaSalle to Chief Judge of the New York State Court of Appeals. And the basis for the article is the fact that at the end of the day, the governor has the responsibility not to only appease or placate or promote the agenda of some people, but has to balance her capacity as the governor of the state of New York to eclipse not only one party or another, not only one gender or another, not only one ethnicity or another over an other, and so on and so forth, but needs to balance it out. So her responsibility is greater than simply the voice of like For example, the person that really offended me by her attitude, which was none other than Shelley Mayer, the New York State Assembly, Senator, who really questioned the integrity of Kathy Hochul because she wants to nominate the New York Hector LaSalle, the Honorable Hector LaSalle, to New York's top judge. And so it's really very compelling. It turns out that Hector LaSalle would become the chief judge of the New York State Court of Appeals if Kathy Hochul is successful in shepherding him through and getting approval. But what's fascinating is that Hector LaSalle is being designated by Kathy Hochul, and I think that some people think that his demeanor is too conservative, and they want somebody who's more progressive. And those are terms. Like progressives are supposedly more democratic, more Democrats, or Democrats are defined as being progressives. Conservative demeanor is supposedly defined Republicans or the Conservative Party members. But how do you marry the two? And is there a way of doing so? And can we prejudge the Honorable Hector LaSalle? And my question is it just his political dogma that upsets some people that he's being considered by Kathy Hochul to be the next chief judge of the New York State Court of Appeals? He would replace Janet DeFiore, who resigned unexpectedly about 6 months ago. So, I mean, I just don't quite understand it. What's the problem? And I don't get what the problem is. And again, if some of the population believes in one thing and not the other, how do you balance that out? And can you balance it out? Or can we expect that through dialogue, even if some people are more conservative than progressive than others, that you could still come to a balance between those two perspectives? And are those two perspectives that diametrically opposed that they cannot be eclipsed? And why can't we have an open discussion about that to realize at the end of the day, or to conceive by listening to those discussions in a very public way, in a public forum, of how to go about getting a little bit closer to one another and to question the integrity of those items that are postulated by one party or the other. And if there's a way of bridging those, and if there isn't, why isn't there? And what is the holding pattern? So those are the things that concern me greatly, because I don't understand exactly where we're going to go if we find that we're at each other's throats at every turn, and yet I wonder if we're doing so because of our political philosophy. Is it politics that's driving us? Do we cling to one party over the other? Is there any other aspect in governance other than the political dogma? And can it be? And why don't we evaluate? And is politics the end all and be all? And are Republicans always right? Are Democrats always right? Is there a little bit of this and a little bit of that? But which way do we go? And what do you do? What do you do when it's uneven? How do you balance the fact that maybe 35% or 40% of the population may think one way and the other thinks 60% is okay. Does that mean that all the goodies go to the 60% and nothing goes the other way? Does anybody get thrown a bone? Where do we go here? And this is what I find really compelling, that we don't know what we're doing, and we're just doing it because we have the power to do so. So in other words, we are literally, it's almost like disemboweling the other side, because supposedly they have a majority. Just it's like one vote is going to make the difference between, you know, something earth-shaking or something that's valid. How do you dismiss a large proportion of society because you supposedly can? And we didn't. This dogma that's being promoted may not have been relevant 5 years ago. So why is it relevant now? And is there a better way of deciding what is or is not relevant? And what do we do about the people that we do not define as viable in our thinking process? This is what is also very, very detrimental, that we don't seem to know how to recognize some, and yet we recognize others. And it isn't always by the number of people that adhere to one philosophy or the other, because not everyone is on the same plane. They're not on the same level, and so on and so forth. And that's part of the problem with society overall. How do you, I guess, immerse a diversity of concepts, ideas, peoples, ethnicities, genders, and so on and so forth, no matter how the definition, and how do you bring that together? And therefore, since there are so many aspects that define and are complex and cannot be engrossed in what, with one another, how do we eclipse all of those issues? Well, it looks like Ron Matten's on the line. We'll bring him in. Yes, Mr. Matten.
How are you doing, Ezzy? Sorry for the late call. I'm actually getting my car inspected. Let me go outside where it might be. Yeah, let me know if the audio is a problem, because I don't want to, you know, I'm outside. I'm not inside. Are you okay? Everything sound all right?
Everything is fine. Whether you're outside or inside, we hear you. And I guess that's the most important thing. Well, Happy New Year. We are 2023.
Happy New Year to you. Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Again, Happy New Year. It's going to be an interesting year for Yonkers, as we're in, we're in an election for local politicians this year. And, you know, all the rumors are flying about who's running for what. So that should be pretty interesting. I also read your article about Judge DiFiore's replacement, or proposed replacement. It seems that the liberal wing of the Democratic Party is upset with the governor for picking a what they call a centrist judge.
Well, I think that's really probably the most salient thing I've heard about this whole issue with the Honorable Hector de la Salle, supposedly being appointed to Chief Judge of the New York State Court of Appeals. He would replace Janet DeFiore, who retired unexpectedly about six months ago. But, you know, I think the story to me was bigger than this particular man, the Honorable Hector de la Salle. I think the problem is, how do we choose someone who is open-minded enough and yet still holds political concepts deep to their heart, and yet it just still at the same time can be balanced in their ability to make a judgment call. And is everything politically focused, or is there another means to get to a conclusion?
Yeah, unfortunately, the judiciary is highly politicized at this point, where it really should not be. If you remember back, the David Souter was, and I'm going to Supreme Court versus, New York State Court of Appeals, but, these judges who get nominated and work their way up through state and federal courts look to work their way up further. So it is, they do look for a certain political ideology that's either professed or perceived. I believe that the left wing of the Democratic Party is really looking to find somebody who more aligned with the bail reform, more aligned with other criminal justice reforms, and apparently they feel that the selected judge is not on board with labor because he made a ruling back in 2015. And again, I don't know the direct cases, and I don't perceive to know this judge all that well. Only what I've read.
I don't know him
from his detractors. So that's the reason. Apparently, the folks on the left wing of the party selected three judges that were acceptable to them for appointment, and I guess they're feeling that those weren't regarded because they picked somebody else. So there are about 11. Now, remember, in New York State, it's the Senate that confirms. The Assembly has nothing to do with it. So there are about 11 state senators that are not on board with this pick, Democratic state senators, which means I think the judge will need one or two Republicans to come forward and support her pick. So we'll see where this goes.
That's a question. Is it conceivable that a judge can balance the political dogma in a society that is split, maybe not equally, so I don't think it's 50-50, not 50 Republican, 50 Democrat, 50 Democrat, 50 Republican, and a smidgen of other parties here and there. So do we care? Do we care about maybe some of the smaller parties, like the Working Families Party? Are they being represented by any of the people that are chosen?
The Working Families Party is very small. Even the conservative. So the Conservative Party, I don't know the numbers on the Working Families Party. The Conservative Party in Yonkers represents about 10,000 registered voters. Mm-hmm. The Republican about 22,000.
Okay.
I don't know. The Working Families Party is the smallest of the four. I don't know how many folks that they represent. I do know that in the last election when they had a primary, you had only 16 members of the Working Family Party come out and vote, for council president. So that was, so they are kind of small.
The question is not a question of size. The question is, what do we do? Do we only go in this particular case because the Democrats are in the majority? Do we go only with Democrats? What do we do about the rest of the population, which altogether may be very close to the 50% of the Democrats, but maybe individually they don't come up to 50%? Do we believe it's appropriate to dismiss people?
I don't know the party. I'm going to assume the selected judge is a Democrat, because Hochul probably wouldn't pick. Remember, DeFiore was a Republican before she became a Democrat. That's a common disease or illness that happens these days. But yeah, so, you know, we have a lot of former, I don't know what this gentleman's political affiliation was, what his, you know, I don't know enough about him other than it's caused some consternation within the Democratic Party. I haven't heard anything officially Republican from the Republicans, whether they support him or not. And, you know, by the state constitution, it's Hochul's choice. And if she can find the requisite number of senators to approve it, it's a done deal. And I'm quite sure
exactly.
It'll be a bipartisan vote, which actually looks better.
I think from her perspective and for the state's perspective, she wouldn't be dismissing anybody in particular, especially if she gets support from both parties or more than the two major parties. And I think that, to me, is the only question. Can one, because one has a vote, be able to dismiss a large population of our society and take away their voice because they're in the minority? And if that's the case, then...
Let's look at Yonkers. I mean, you know, would you expect Mayor Spano to, you know, we have an open judge's seat now that Velasquez went to the state. Do you expect Mayor Spano to appoint Gordon Burroughs to that spot, or, you know, Castroblanco, another Republican, to that spot? Or would you expect him to, let's say, Tom Daley might be aged out at this point, but Brendan McGrath, you know, could he appoint Brendan McGrath and give McGrath another run at it?
Well, but that's the question, though, isn't it? Why aren't these people who are in judges, don't they have a demeanor? Or is everything that they make a judgment call on politically based? Or when they get to their position of appointed position, are they able to eclipse the politics and just do what's appropriate by law?
So I think it becomes, I think it's based on the importance of the position. So let's take somebody like George Latimer. George Latimer appointed Jim Maizano, a Republican, to be the commissioner of consumer affairs in Westchester.
Okay.
So, you know, he showed himself to be bipartisan. Mike Spano appointed Liam McLaughlin to be inspector general. You know, clearly a Republican. I don't know if Hochul has appointed any Republicans within her within the seat. I don't recall the names right now, but I even think that Andrew Cuomo had some Republicans within his administration. But I think when you get to a judge, because a judge is appointed for either a much longer term, can't be so easily impeached, I think that becomes, and plus they move up, I think that becomes more of a key appointment that you don't go outside a party. And unfortunately, party for that is taken as the number one criteria. And then you start getting into political dogma a little bit, or, you know, the political viewpoints of the judicial candidate. You know, somebody, you know, there are a number of Democrats out there who are more more conservative than a number of the Republicans out there, you know, than some Republicans, and even as judges. They just wind up Republicans by virtue, I'm a Democrat rather, by virtue of where they live and can get elected. You know, there's a gentleman running now for the Yonkers.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say there's a guy running now for Yonkers City Court, Nick Speranza, who was a Republican, might have even been a conservative at one point, but now he's a Democrat because he's got his, you know, best chance. Richard Sweeney, who was a very qualified candidate, you know, couldn't win. Nice guy, liked by many people, was not able to win as a Republican. Unfortunate.
And do you think it was because of their political persuasion that diminished their capacity?
Well, I think a lot of people start at the top. I think a lot of people start at the top of the ticket and work their way down, or right now work their way sideways because the ballots kind of are a line across.
Okay.
And look, we have an election this year. The mayor's gonna head the ticket. I assume the mayor will head the ticket. We'll see after lawsuits and the primary. But if I were to have to put money down on it, I'd bet on Mike Spano being the Democratic nominee July. So you're going to have a Democratic mayor at the top of the ticket, and then you've got a couple of council positions, and you'll have a judge because we've got two judge seats open this year. Velasquez is judge and Arthur Duran is judge. I assume Arthur Duran is popular on around Yonkers and he's going to win his election again. We'll have to see who comes up in the other one. But again, a lot of people are going to start with Mayor Spano and work their way across the paper.
Okay.
And not even pay any mind to who the other candidates are. Whether that's because they work for the city and they've been told to vote a certain way, or it's because that they're a Democrat and they're going to go straight through. But I understand that there are going to be a number of Democratic challengers this year. There's been some rumors out there, more than rumors, that Carazone is still going to run, and Margaret Coleman is putting her hat in the ring. Yeah, for mayor. And the Working Families Party met 3 weeks ago and had not decided on which candidate they were going to support. But whoever they support, if it's a Working Families Party candidate, they're guaranteed to be on until the general election. If it is not a Working Families Party candidate, they'll probably have a few candidates who are opportunity to ballot, which means they'll go out and get signatures to get on the ballot. Then you got Councilor One.
Who's Coleman?
Pardon?
Who's Coleman?
Margaret Coleman is the wife of Reverend Frank Coleman. So he's, I believe, the head of the NAACP in Yonkers.
Okay.
And again, this is a rumor. I don't know it to be true.
Okay.
It's only been a rumor that she wants to run.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's related to anything with the four terms or not, or what happens. But yeah, she is interested in, I understand. She is interested in running for mayor. There's a lot of people who are interested in running for mayor. But once Mayor Spano comes in, and he's got, as of June, he had $250,000 in his campaign account. I'm sure it's up to three right now. That's a lot for anybody to overcome. And plus having to overcome the Spano name and machine.
Yeah.
And look, I have nothing against Mike Spano. I think he's benefited, particularly in the last 4 years, for him being in place, getting Lionsgate here, the development with the studios, Joe Cotter. I think that's all been positive. Some of it is a little too large on the waterfront, in my opinion, but I think we're better off with it here than not being here, at least at this stage. So, my comments here are not meant to be a rating on the Spano administration by any means. Do I feel we can survive without Mayor Spano? Sure, I do. It's all going to depend on who's running and who gets elected.
Exactly.
So there are folks out there who can run the city. I just don't think any of them have come forward yet and said that they want to run for mayor.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, people seem to be reluctant, or maybe they're just waiting for the lawsuit to find out if the mayor has the capacity to run for a fourth four-year term.
Well, this is usually the month between now. This month, January, is when people decide if they're running.
Mm-hmm.
And February is when we have the party convention, nominating conventions. And
mm-hmm.
the last week in February, first week in March, is when you're able to go out and get signatures. Plus, not
yeah.
this is doesn't matter for the mayor's race, but we have a redistricting going on where they're going to balance out the populations in the district, trying to make sure they abide by the criteria of being compact and not disenfranchising any marginalized groups.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all up as we go in. So people might be holding back a little bit to make sure they fall in their districts. Again, the mayor's running citywide. So that's I've been approached to run, but I'm not. I've been approached by a bipartisan group to run for mayor,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that's the best place that I could serve the city at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the election is kind of daunting.
Okay.
And I don't think I have the resources to win. So,
mm-hmm.
but it is something that's on my radar for the possible future years.
Yeah, you're still a young
so
guy.
So I keep an eye on that. Yeah. So
that's
I am
cool.
I am considering a run for the 5th Council District, whether or not Mike
really?
Green decides he's running. Yeah, whether or not
okay.
Mike Green decides he's running, I still am considering a run for that district, only because I feel that my viewpoints better serve the city than Mr. Breen's. So
mm-hmm.
I better serve that district, as a matter of fact.
Right.
I'm concerned about where we would go on development. But I need to look at where my resources are, and I'll be making that decision by the end of the month.
Okay. Well, that should be
interesting. But it's certainly on a front burner, and I do have a couple of people who are willing to work my campaign. And
okay.
again, it's bipartisan, so I do have a bipartisan group. So I could run as a Republican, or I could run as an independent. I'll also make that decision closer to the end of the month.
Is that important?
Well, it is.
I think it is personally, but you know.
Well, the idea is, you have to obtain signatures in the beginning.
Right.
So when I ran it's a percentage of the registered voters. I think it's 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I have to look that
mm-hmm.
up. But I think the signatures for the 5th Council District for a Republican would be about 300 signatures. And I think the
okay.
signatures to run as an independent, which you can pull from any political party, is about 700. But I need to
okay.
double check that with
okay.
the Westchester County Board of Elections.
Mm-hmm.
But in either
mm-hmm.
way, I don't feel either number is really a problem.
Okay.
So
and
if you
run on more than one political, can you run on more than one political line at the same time?
Yes, you can run on two, but again, you have to. There's a primary for these political lines in June, usually around
okay.
the 25th, give or take whatever that Tuesday is.
Mm-hmm.
So you, if you're running as an independent in a created political party, then you won't have anybody primarying you. If I were to run as a Republican and somebody else wants to run, plus, you know, we have the Conservative Party as well. Now, I reached out to you,
yeah.
Fox, looking to see what kind of support. Unfortunately, Mr. Fox has not returned my calls, so I'm thinking that they've either got it, They've either got a candidate already or they're not interested, which is unfortunate. I was a little over 1,100 votes short in the last election. I think if I would have had the Conservative Party line and their endorsement, I would have won. I would have won that race. So for whatever reason, they stayed out of the race last time, and I'll have to see where they are this time in making my decision.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Very, very interesting.
I'll give you the exclusive. I'll give you the exclusive if I'm running.
We'll see how it goes. I wish you the best because I think you're very accomplished, and I think that, you know, quite often we just vote for people because political positions, but then they also need to have the experience which you have, which I found compelling. I mean, how many people could say that they weren't involved in a city like Greenwich and that you were there and you managed so much of what went on there? So you've got knowledge. And then you're on different boards here at the city of Yonkers with the Board of Education and so many other things that you've been involved in. That takes time and effort and interest. So that should count for something. I wonder if it does anymore. To me, it does, because I'm looking for people with experience. I just don't want people to, well, I think this and I think that, you know. Have you tried it? No. which is not good. We have too many of these people who want to be, who just can't quite cut it, which is freaky. Anyway, any last-minute words from you? Let's see. Hopefully I didn't lose him. Bear with me a second. Maybe I have. We'll see in a moment. Okay. Yeah, for some crazy reason, I disconnected him. Are you there?
They went to take my car into the inspection, and I wound up the cell phone connected to the car. So I'm back.
Okay. Well, thank goodness for that. Any last? No problem. Any last words from you before we go?
Nothing else. It was a pleasure, and look forward to seeing where this Senate confirmation goes. We've got an interesting year next year as far as elections in the office. So always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Have a great new year, and be healthy.
All the best to you and the family. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
There we have it, folks. Ron Matten. Potentially a candidate for a political office. Now, that would be very, very exciting. And we'll see what happens there. Okay, so we've got a couple of other things that we can cover. And I wanted to read this to you because this is what I ended up writing. It's called, it's an editorial. It's called Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Political dogma has become a pathology that undermines accommodation of diverse human opinion, written by me, Hezi Aris. So it's the hesitorial. So a glaring and insulting outcome reared its ugly head when New York State Senator Shelley Mayer's progressive ideology became the attempted cudgel to undermine the appointment of the Honorable Hector D. LaSalle to Chief Judge of the New York State Court of Appeals as expressed by Governor Kathy Hochul. As Chief Judge, LaSalle would lead New York's highest court and oversee the state's entire judiciary branch. Senator Mayer represents the city of Yonkers, as well as Yonkers and by the knowledgeable as a and a little bit of rock and roll. New York State politics is likewise a bit of this and a bit of that. The Honorable Hector D. LaSalle may not conform to the political ideology Senator Mayer espouses. Even so, who does Senator Mayer think she is to demean a full-fledged introspection of his ideologies, for she denigrates his worthiness as recognized by Governor Hochul? So does Senator Mayer represent only some of the people in her district with disregard for those who do not? And whatever happened to respect of others? Is she attempting to bolster her languishing standing among Yonkersites? Does she possess the mental acuity to define why the Honorable Hector D. LaSalle is not qualified? And does he represent a boundary she does not have the ability to eclipse with logic and deference and respect to the entirety on New York State residents? Will she assert her credentials as that of a Democrat without accommodation of any other philosophies? She ostracizes an almost equal number of Republicans that reside in Yonkers, the third largest city in New York State, as well as Republicans throughout the state. Whatever happened to discourse? Has Senator Mayer lost respect for some of our citizenry, but not others? Her belligerent pronouncement challenging Governor Hochul's suggested succession to the Honorable Hector D. LaSalle since the unforeseen resignation of Chief Judge Janet DeFiore some 6 months ago is appalling. Senator Mayer presents a myopic view of New York State's demeanor. She believes by promoting progressive, quote-unquote, dogma, she can define and hold on to concepts that she sternly believes, as do many who voted for her. Her myopic perspective dismisses a swath of Republican residents who broadly advocate for traditional values, a low degree of government interference, and large support of the private sector. For Senator Mayer, the division between Democrats and Republicans is an opportunity for her to sound off. Her irrelevance as New York State Senator has been strewn and loitered by innocuous and meaningless pronouncements delivering little, if anything, of relevance to the city of Yonkers. Governor Hochul reigns over the entire state and must logically meter balance in legislation and appointment as she serves New York State constituents of all political dogma, all ethnicities, females, males, transgendered, straights, gays, and bisexual. Political dogma must not eclipse our definition of who and how we define ourselves, nor should the political divisions be permitted to exacerbate division among any society. Who is more appropriate for the New York State chief judge? Is his conservative leaning troublesome to Senator Mayer? Why? Is it his political stance? Is it his ethnicity? His being male? How many boxes does Senator Mayer believe she could tick off to deny the Honorable Hector D. LaSalle alighting to New York State's chief judge? The audacity of Senator Mayer's conduct is simply self-serving. The Yonkers Tribune hopes that irrelevant, grandstanding buzzards such as Senator Mayer receive a dressing down by Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, and independents alike. It is time politicians learned how to serve society in its entirety, even with imperfections, if necessary, to be respectful of all. So that's what's important. Okay, so let's quickly look and see what else is happening on the world stage. So that was my editorial. Hopefully you'll find it of relevance. And let's move on to a couple of other issues. Most important thing probably is that thousands are paying tribute to the late Pope Benedict at the Vatican. Mourners have begun paying their respects to the former Pope, whose body will lie in state for the next 3 days. A quarter of a million visitors are expected to pass by. The doors to St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican opened on Monday to allow the thousands of people queued up outside the chance to pay their respects to the late Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, who died on New Year's Eve at the age of 95. The body of the German former Pope, who stepped down from the role in 2013, will lie in state for 3 days before his funeral on Thursday morning. People began gathering outside the basilica at dawn before the doors opened. The public will be allowed to view the body for 10 hours on Monday, while 12 hours are scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday. So what do we know about Benedict's funeral? The Vatican has not yet released a guest list for Benedict's funeral. aside from the fact that it will include delegations from Italy as well as Germany, where Benedict, formerly Josef Ratzinger, was born. He will be buried in the papal tombs under St. Peter's Basilica in a solemn but simple funeral, the Vatican had said. Officials said they are expecting around 25,000 people to come and pay their respects to the Pope, who was considered by many an expert theologian, but also a divisive and highly conservative figure in the Catholic Church. The 2005 funeral for Benedict's predecessor, Pope John Paul II, was attended by a million people, including heads of states from around the world. So why was Benedict such a controversial figure? Born in the German state of Bavaria, Ratzinger served as Archbishop of Munich until 1982. He left Germany to head up the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, one of the oldest bodies in the Catholic Church, which seeks to defend Roman Catholic doctrine. He was named Pope in 2005, but served during a time when scandals and allegations of sexual abuse were rife. Benedict came under fire for failing to respond to the numerous revelations of widespread abuse before he retired a decade ago, citing health issues. Former Pope also admitted in early 2022 to have made a false statement during an investigation into sexual abuse within the German Catholic Church, but rejected claims that he had tried to cover up cases of abuse. So, wow, what can I tell you? Now, let's just quickly look. There are so many other things as well to cover. And this is very interesting. The German defense minister has lambasted NYE, Ukraine message. It seems the German media has mocked a tone-deaf, quote-unquote, video put out by Defense Minister Christine Lambrecht. She was slammed for discussing the war in Ukraine as people set off fireworks. Germany's Defense Minister Christine Lambrecht came under fire on Monday for what has been considered a tone-deaf video published on her social media account. Lambrecht shared the video on Instagram in which she appears on a street in Berlin during chaotic New Year's celebrations. Her reflections of the, quote, war raging in the middle of Europe, end quote, in reference to the already 10-month-long war in Ukraine, have been called insensitive, with a backdrop of loud fireworks blasting behind her. German newspaper Der Tagesspiegel, it means the Daily Mirror in German, said that the address failed to hit the right tone, instead painting the war as an exciting professional experience. And okay, so a lawmaker from the opposition Christian Democratic Union, CDU, called for Lambrecht's resignation after the video went viral on German-speaking social media, with many people mocking the minister. Quote, the speech about the war with New Year's Eve firecrackers in the background only crowns her series of embarrassments, the CDU Christian Democratic Union lawmaker Serap Güler wrote in a tweet addressed to Chancellor Olaf Scholz. Who is supposed to take us seriously anymore, she added. I don't see any reason to evaluate this now, Deputy Government Spokesperson Christiane Hoffmann had said in response. The chairperson for the Bundestag Defense Committee, Maria Agnes Strack-Zimmermann, distanced herself from the video, which had been made privately and not with ministry resources, saying, quote, the New Year's video in question is a matter for the minister and her communication staff. I myself find the setting somewhat unfortunate, she says. I don't want to say more about it, she added. And that was her conclusion. Now, one second. This is unexpected. It's in the Ukraine update. Kyiv reports that more Russian drone attacks. seems that the Ukrainian capital has been targeted by Russian airstrikes for the fifth consecutive night, with the city's mayor claiming that Ukraine shot down 40 drones. Well, Russian drones attacked parts of Ukraine overnight, Ukrainian authorities said on Monday, marking five consecutive nights of drone attacks. Kyiv Mayor Vitaly Klitschko said that 40 exploding drones headed for Kyiv overnight, all of which were destroyed. 22 drones were destroyed over Kyiv, three in the outlying Kyiv region, and 15 more over neighboring provinces. Klitschko said that energy infrastructure was destroyed in Kyiv, and one explosion occurred. A 19-year-old man who was injured in a blast in the Desnyansky region, a district, was being treated at a hospital. And according to Ukraine's Air Force Command, Ukrainian forces shot down 39 Iranian-made Shahed drones overnight, as well as two Russian-made Orlan drones and an X-59 missile across Ukraine. Russia's New Year's attacks had targeted downtown areas of large cities like Mykhailo Podolyak, advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had said. Ukrainian officials said that seven drones were shot down over the southern Mykolaiv region, and three more were shot down in the southeastern Dnipropetrovsk region. Well, Ukraine awaits first portion of the European Union aid. Zelensky said he was waiting for the first tranche of 18 million euros support package from the European Union on Monday, following a phone call from the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. And Zelensky said, glad to start the year talking to von der Leyen, thanked for the European Union support, waiting for the first tranche of macro financial aid in January, the first batch of LED lamps, school buses, generators, and modular houses, coordinated steps on summit, and we feel support and we'll win together. Von der Leyen tweeted that her first call of the year was with the Ukrainian leader, where she conveyed her wholehearted support and best wishes for the Ukrainian people this year. European Union stands by you for as long as it takes, von der Leyen had said. She added that the European Union would be supporting Ukraine through the winter with generators, light bulbs, shelters, and school buses. Ukrainian strike has killed 63 Russian soldiers. Russia's defense ministry announced on Monday that a strike by Ukrainian forces on a temporary accommodation complex in the Russian-controlled Ukrainian city of Mykolaivka killed 63 Russian soldiers. As a result of the strike by four missiles with a high explosive warhead on a temporary deployment point, 63 Russian servicemen were killed, the ministry said. Ukrainian military has not claimed responsibility for the attack, but has said that almost 400 Russian troops were killed in Mykolaivka. Stoltenberg said that NATO must boost weapons production. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said that the military alliance must boost its weapons production as Russia's invasion of Ukraine drags on into a second year. We need to ramp up production, and that's exactly what the Allies are doing, Stoltenberg said in an interview with the British broadcaster BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation, that was broadcast on Sunday. He said that supplying spare parts and parts and ammunition is just as important as delivering new weapon systems to Kyiv. Stoltenberg added that, quote, Russia shows no signs of giving up its overall goal of taking control of the Ukraine, end quote, which means Kyiv must be in a position of strength when at the negotiating table to end the war. Ukrainian forces had the momentum for several months, but we also know that Russia has mobilized many more forces. Many of them are now being trained, he said. All of that indicates that they are ready to continue the war and potentially try to launch a new offensive. Well, the ex-NATO General Dombrose expects a ceasefire this year. Former NATO General Hans-Lothar Domroza said in a newspaper interview that Ukraine, quote, will have a ceasefire in the course of 2023. Former general in the German armed forces said that both Russia and Ukraine would launch offensives in the near future, but he expected a slowdown in the early summer. That would be the moment for ceasefire negotiations, said Domroza. He said one solution could be for Zelensky to give up his demand that territories occupied by Russia, such as Crimea, be reintegrated into Ukraine. The UK intelligence says that both sides are fighting over the P-66 highway. A British military intelligence report said it was likely that Russia and Ukraine were fighting over control of the P-66 highway north of the town of Krenina in the eastern Ukrainian region of Luhansk. The route has been disrupted since October by Ukrainian artillery. If Ukraine gained control, it would make it more difficult for Russia to defend Krenina, according to the regular intelligence update. So, wow. So we're going to have to see where all that goes. One second. And this I found really interesting because I'm Jewish. India, New Delhi's tiny Jewish community, keeps its customs alive. Seems that India's capital has only one synagogue and a small Jewish community, fewer than 10 families. Rabbi Ezekiel, that's my name, the long-term name for Hezi is Ezekiel, Isaac Malika, works to bring people together and preserve Jewish traditions. So it seems that on a chilly December night, an eclectic group of people gathered at the Judah Hayam Synagogue in central New Delhi to celebrate Hanukkah, the Festival of Light. In attendance were Indian Jews, a couple of Jewish families visiting from the United States, and other visitors from various other religions. Rachel, a Jewish woman from New York, had visited this synagogue a few years ago during a student trip to India. Now I am back here on holiday with two children. Since it is Hanukkah, I thought it would be interesting to bring them here. The event was also attended by government officials and Supreme Court lawyers who lit the candles for the celebration. India is one of the few countries where Jews have never been persecuted. That's why I always say I am Indian first and a Jew second, Rabbi Ezekiel Isaac Malakar told the attendees before beginning the prayer service. Well, India's Jewish community can be roughly divided into the B'nai Israelis of Western India, the Baghdadi Jews of West Bengal, and the Cochin Jews of Kerala. Well, there are also the B'nai Menashe Jews of Northeast India and the B'nai Ephraims of Andhra Pradesh. Well, Jewish communities in India integrated with local culture and picked up regional customs, traditions, dressing styles, and languages, said Malakar. They often adopted surnames based on the names of their towns and villages. India's Jewish population was around 50,000 in the 1940s. Many Jews have since moved to Israel, the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, and other countries. There are currently only an estimated 6,000 Jews across India. However, despite being a small community, Jews have made a significant contribution to India's society and culture. David Sassoon was well known as a businessman and a philanthropist in the 1800s. J.F.R. Jacob, born in 1924, served in the Indian Army and played a crucial role in the Indo-Pakistan War of 1971. New Delhi has a small community of less than 10 Jewish families. They consist mostly of diplomats and expats from other countries, as well as Indian Jews have moved to the city. New Delhi's Judah Hayam Synagogue, inaugurated in the 1950s and run by Malakar, is the major place of worship for them. He himself is an internal migrant from the western city of Pune. A government job brought him to the Indian capital, and soon he undertook the care and maintenance of the synagogue in the 1980s without receiving remuneration. A Jewish cemetery and a library, which conducts Hebrew classes, are located close to the synagogue. Malakar has tried to keep up with modern society while maintaining traditions. He has officiated 15 interfaith marriages so far and said he does not ask any partner to change their religion or their spouse. For the reading of the Torah, you require 10 men. I have completely avoided this and allow anyone who would like to attend, he said. According to the times, we must change our attitude not only in Judaism, but in all religions. Renowned Odissi dancer Sharon Lowen is also part of New Delhi's Jewish community. An American citizen, Lowen has been living in the capital for several years. I'm the granddaughter of Jewish immigrants to the United States who had to leave their homes in Eastern Europe more than a century ago because of life-threatening anti-Semitism, she said. It has been a great pleasure to live in India close to 50 years, knowing that this country has been home to Jews since before the Christian era, with full religious freedom, even offering a safe haven to those fleeing Europe in the 1930s and 40s. Also, it is natural that most Indians assume Westerners to be Christian. I've made it clear when it comes up that I am Jewish and not Christian, she added. Several of his family members have moved abroad to Israel, Australia, and Canada, but he does not wish to move away from his homeland. Israel is in my heart, but India is in my blood, he said. Literally fascinating, because we just don't know how things are. One second. Okay, this is really interesting as well as we move on, because this will probably be my last issue. So the question is, will Iran see reform or more repression in 2023? The year 2023 will not be an easy one for Iran, as the rift between the rulers and the ruled becomes greater than ever. On the foreign policy front, Tehran has reached an impasse. 2022, women-led mass protests to demand equal rights and more freedoms have posed the biggest challenge to Iran's clerical regime since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. The tragic death of 22-year-old Kurdish woman Jinnah Mahsa Amini in police custody has mobilized Iranian women to take to the streets in protest against everyday humiliation, mistreatment, and gender discrimination. Despite a brutal clampdown by security forces, thousands of Iranian girls and women continue to refuse to wear headscarves or hijabs in public, challenging the entire political system. What these women are doing in Iran is a revolution, at least a cultural revolution, as Azadeh Khan, a sociologist, advised. We are seeing for the first time that a large number of women have overcome their fear and are showing themselves in public without the obligatory hijab, at least in the big cities, said Khan, who is director of the Center for Gender and Feminist Studies at the University of Paris and has long been researching the women's movement in Iran. Quote, this has secularized the image of women in society and encouraged women to take further steps and demand equal rights, he added. The image of women in public plays an important role in the theocratic state's ideology, which wants women to not only wear a hijab, but also accept a subordinate role in society. Wearing a headscarf has been compulsory for girls and women in Iran since the 1979 revolution. The World Economic Forum's Gender Gap report shows the extent to which women in Iran are disadvantaged because of their gender. The report ranked the nation's 143rd of 146 countries for gender parity. This is despite the fact that more women than men have been studying at Iran's universities for many years. In 2006, around 60% of students in Iran have been female, according to official figures. However, their share in the labor market is only 15%. The regime relies on repression. The hijab is the flag of the Islamic Republic. Those who refuse to wear a hijab will have to pay a heavy price, Hossein Jalali, an Iranian lawmaker and member of the parliament's cultural committee, said earlier this month. He also announced new punitive measures against women who do not wear a hijab appropriately, such as blocking their bank accounts. Such statements indicate that despite the nationwide mass protest, which resulted in the death of over 400 demonstrators and the imprisonment of about 18,000 people, Iran's leaders are hardly thinking about serious reforms. Instead, the regime is relying on a brutal crackdown and trying to intimidate protesters by starting to carry out executions of arrested protesters. The regime fails to understand how deeply dissatisfied the people are with the political system, said Sadeh Zibah Kalam, an Iranian academic who has been barred from teaching at any university since October because of his criticism of hardliners in Iran. At the moment, the regime's only goal is to end the protests through repression. From their public statements in recent months, you can see that they have proposed no solutions, neither for the political nor for the social problems, adding that mass protests could erupt at any time. This year, Iran witnessed the most severe and longest protest wave since the founding of the Islamic Republic in 1979. The protesters were not organized and their numbers have not yet reached a critical mass so as to fundamentally overhaul the Iranian state. Nevertheless, the demonstrators came from all strata of society, including ethnic and religious minorities. Apart from a lack of political freedom, they all suffer from the ongoing economic crisis, galloping inflation, increased water shortages, and growing environmental problems. The political system, which values ideological loyalty over expertise and experience to recruit officials, has found no answer to the problems that make life difficult for the nation's nearly 84 million people year after year. So the issues the protesters are fighting for can be heard in the song that became the anthem of the protests in Iran, Balaye, which means for this. The song was produced by young composer and singer Shervin Hajipour in September of 2022. The lyrics consist of tweets in which people explain what they are taking to the streets for, and for my sister, your sister, our sister, to change brains that rot, for shame of poverty, for the yearning for an ordinary life, for the sake of the poor child's picking through the garbage in his dreams, for this command economy, for this polluted air, the song reads. So Tehran is under regional and global pressure. So on the foreign policy front, the Iranian government has reached an impasse. The negotiations in Vienna to revive the nuclear agreement between Tehran and the world powers have been at a standstill for months. Iran hasn't made much progress when it comes to deepening its economic cooperation with China. And the two countries signed a 25-year comprehensive cooperation agreement in 2021 of nearly 100 point projects in Iran, such as infrastructure development or the establishment of free trade zones. Not a single one has been or has seen progress. The Chinese investors are holding back due to fears over potential U.S. sanctions for doing business with Iran. Even more painful for Iran is China's backing of Saudi Arabia, so Tehran's arch rival in the Middle East. And so on, and that's the case. Can't finish anymore because we've come to the end of our show and our broadcast. Thank you so much for being with us today. Always a pleasure, to say the least. So enjoy the day. Enjoy the new year. Let's make it a new year worth celebrating. Take care and goodbye.